You're listening to In the Vault, a KPMG banking industry podcast series.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to today's podcast. I'm Liz Lamadou, a principal in KPMG's Banking and Capital Markets Tax Practice. And today I'm joined by two Washington National Tax colleagues. Mary Slanina is a managing director in our IRS Practice and Procedures team, and Dan Winnick is a partner in our international tax team. Welcome, Mary and Dan.
Thanks, Liz.
So I am excited to have you guys here. Today, we're going to talk through recent changes in the IRS and Treasury. And Mary, I know you spent some time in IRS Chief Counsel's office. Dan, you spent time at both Treasury and on the Ways and Means Committee. So I want to get your thoughts. In the past weeks, the new administration's made lots of changes and taken actions that have potential impact to tax administration, tax guidance, IRS, Treasury. So I want to walk through those with you, see what the changes are, and more importantly, what are they going to mean for taxpayers going forward? So Mary, why don't we start with you? Do you want to give us a quick overview of where the IRS was pre-administration change?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Liz. Over the last 10 years or so, the IRS had seen a decline in its annual budgets, and it had also seen just general attrition and not backfilling staff over the last 10 years. So as we were heading into, probably 2018-19, the IRS staffing and workforce was, had a lot of obstacles in addressing the workload that was put in front of it. And so particularly what happened was then, and I'm sure various people listening to this podcast will be aware of, in the summer of 2022, the Inflation Reduction Act was passed. And particular to the IRS, in that act was an additional $80 billion to the IRS to really, in brief summary, to reorganize and modernize the IRS going forward. And that $80 billion was earmarked over a 10-year period in addition to their annual budget. And so, with that additional funding also came the mandates. You know, there are various mandates around the funding, but some of the particular mandates were to address, particular enforcement efforts with respect to large corporations, large partnerships, complex partnership structures, and high wealth individuals. And so it took a while, obviously, to formulate plans. IRS and Treasury published various strategic plan and updated it periodically as to how this IRA money was going to be implemented. And so over the last 2 years, as a tax practitioner, I can say we definitely saw the addition of revenue agents into large business and international to address the compliance mandates, additional staff, revenue agents, revenue officers who are, those are collection officers into the IRS. And then we also saw frontline taxpayer service employees, those people are picking up the phones, answering questions for taxpayers directly, picking up the phones and talking to people like us, tax practitioners. They're the ones that are staffing the IRS service centers and processing returns and requests for assistance and penalty abatement.
I just want to say that's a really popular anecdote, right? That anyone calling the IRS needs to sit on hold for about a day and a half, and then maybe or maybe not the call be answered. And you mentioned a lot of attrition over the years. So the new personnel, whether for taxpayer assistance or enforcement, was that just getting back to former numbers, or was it really an increase?
You're right. Good question. It was starting to get back to former numbers. So probably I'd say, and this is, take this very lightly because I'm pulling on some memories, but I believe like in the early 2010s, the IRS workforce was around 100,000. And throughout that decade, I believe the numbers went down to about 80,000 and maybe even slipped a little bit between 80,000. And also the numbers can vacillate with filing season. There are sometimes temporary employees as we head into filing season. But if you're thinking about maybe at the end of the 2010s, we're looking at about roughly 80,000 employees. Reports now, as we talk about the reduction in workforce, say that the workforce is about 100,000. So yeah, Liz, you're exactly right that it was the additional employees with Inflation Reduction Act was really just trying to bring the IRS back up to a place it had been. It wasn't necessarily adding to longstanding staffing numbers.
And so roll us forward to, we have an administration change in January.
Obviously, with the administration change and the executive orders, you know, the IRS, like any other federal agency that has been working through the administration change, you know, has tried to implement and follow the executive orders as appropriate. So when we think about IRS staffing, first of all, like there's a general federal government hiring freeze for most agencies. That's been, you know, that's what the IRS is following. And then the IRS had, you know, I think colloquially in the press, it was kind of referred to as a buyout, but it was the email that went out, I believe, end of January, early February to almost the entire federal workforce saying, you know, if you resign, you will be, you know, you'll step away from your job almost immediately, but you will be paid out through September 30th, the end of the fiscal year. As we understand it, about 4,000 to 5,000 IRS employees took that offer. So we've probably seen 4,000 to 5,000 employees step back and leave the agency because of that in the last month. We then had, again, as applicable to a lot of other federal agencies, the IRS let go about 7,000 probationary employees. I see that number go a little below 7,000, a little over 7,000 in various reports. But those probationary employees were let go. And that's where some real numbers are with respect to the efforts over the last 2 years with the Inflation Reduction Act hires. Because a probationary employee, depending on your position, it could either be you're in a probationary period for your first year or your first 2 years. So, you know, without doubt, that grouping of about 7,000 employees represents the hiring efforts over the last 2 years with the inflation reduction funding. And those, a lot of, and again, anecdotally, I can say from experience, a lot of those employees were in the compliance function. So when, again, when you think of examination and revenue agents, a lot of those employees were sitting as examiners within large business and international, within small business and self-employed. You know, I personally had some experience where revenue agents informed me one day that they had been let go because they were probationary and they were gone within the week. So we've seen that. And then, you know, generally we've also just seen employees, various employees are eligible for retirement. There is a good portion of the IRS workforce that is eligible for retirement. And so I've also just heard stories of people just retiring and stepping back because of the, what they, you know, the perceived uncertainty moving forward with the agency.
So can you talk a little bit about leadership changes?
Yeah. So obviously, you know, I talked about the workforce, but also certainly at the top of the IRS, at the executive level, we've seen quite a bit of flux. And I will say going into this, it's changing every day. I think that's probably also a statement I should just make broadly. You know, as of this recording, I'm giving the best knowledge I have at the moment, but it is changing every day. So with respect to the leadership, we went, you know, prior to the administration change, we had Commissioner Danny Werfel. He had been commissioner for about 2 years, commissioner of the IRS, that is a presidential appointee. And he had, you know, particularly been brought in with respect to implementing the IRA funding. And again, implementing that overarching goal of modernization and reorganization for the IRS, because he had particular large organizational experience. The commissioner of the IRS does have a set 5-year term. And so we have seen in the past where with an administration change, even an administration change between different parties, the commissioner has stayed on to finish out that 5-year term into the next administration. However, in this case with Commissioner Werfel, the president-elect that had, you know, President-elect Trump, when he was president-elect, did announce that he was going to nominate former Congressman Billy Long to be commissioner of the IRS. And so, you know, obviously the basic speculation there is with that statement that he was nominating Billy Long, Commissioner Werfel did step down immediately before President Trump's inauguration. You know, Commissioner Werfel stepped aside. In that role, then, there had to be an acting commissioner because Mr. Long, you know, hasn't yet gone through the full Senate confirmation process. And so stepping into the commissioner's role was the deputy of the commissioner of the IRS, Doug O'Donnell. And he was a longtime career IRS employee. I think I read somewhere about 38 years. However, Mr. O'Donnell stepped aside and retired at the end of February. And so at that point, the chief operating officer, Melanie Krause, stepped into the acting role of commissioner. She had joined the IRS again in 2021. So she wasn't a long-term career IRS employee, but she had had prior federal experience at Veterans Affairs. And so she is now currently acting. You know, there's flux at the leadership levels as they're trying to address these workforce issues and address the IRS, the executive orders. And then it, just in general, we've also, again, this is particularly where it's changing every day. We've heard of various other executive positions leaving the service, either retiring or moving on to other opportunities. So like just as of yesterday, it was announced that the chief of tax compliance, who is the head of the examination functions at the IRS, would be leaving as of March 21st, which is tomorrow, as we're recording today on March 20th. So yeah, so we're seeing a lot of that as well.
Definitely a lot of changes, a lot of movement. So I want to flip over to Treasury for a minute. And Dan, can you take us through something similar? Like what's changing in Treasury leadership? Where were they pre-administration and what does it look like now?
Sure. So Treasury is a little bit different from the IRS because it's a smaller organization, the portion of Treasury that works on tax policy in the Office of Tax Policy and some other offices that have some personnel who are adjacent to tax policy. In the main Treasury building, there are many more political appointees. In the IRS, only the commissioner and the chief counsel are appointed by the president and confirmed by the Senate. In the Treasury Department, you have many more officers who are either appointed by the secretary and confirmed by the Senate or appointed directly by the Treasury Secretary. And so they leave during presidential transition. And those personnel generally have shorter tenures in general, even apart from presidential transitions. So we do have a Senate confirmed Treasury Secretary, the Deputy Secretary. So that Treasury Secretary is number two. His nomination is moving along as well. But we haven't yet had scheduled other important personnel like the Assistant Secretary for Tax Policy. There are some personnel coming in below that level who don't require Senate confirmation, but there's still a number of posts that are open, and we have individuals who are acting, career civil servants who are acting in those ordinarily political roles in kind of a caretaker capacity. So during a transition, we normally see the published guidance process come to a halt, and Treasury will just do sort of maintenance that's necessary to keep the system going while the new personnel get a handle on what are the open items and where they want to put their resources. The beginning of a presidential year, and this is the case this year, is also complicated by the fact that the new administration often wants to pass tax legislation. And so since in this case, the Republicans have a trifecta, they're interested in their top priority is going to be tax legislation. And so the new political appointees may also spend a lot of their time working on potential tax legislation in the administration's positions, priorities, or just working with data that Treasury has to inform Congress of the administration's positions and some of the data behind it, reviewing revenue estimates and things like that. And that may sort of distract from restarting the published guidance process. The IRA also allocated some additional funding to the Treasury Department Office of Tax Policy. And so there are a few more personnel than there have been in some time in the recent past. Many of those people were focused on implementing the Inflation Reduction Act energy provisions. So that was a top priority of the last administration. But during the last administration, we've had several large tax bills. The Tax Cuts and Jobs Act in 2017, of course, took the direct guidance process leading out of that took many years. And even now, we still have sort of knock-on effects from TCJA where existing provisions of law took on new meaning, especially in the international space. And so you're still seeing revisions to the existing code that I think go back to TCJA. And then there's guidance under the Inflation Reduction Act, like the Corporate Alternative Minimum Tax, where we only have a very large set of proposed regulations, and just the ongoing process of revising kind of old and cold law regulations to modernize them either because of changes in the market or just a realization that they weren't as clear as necessary. And all this is happening in a context where the rules around administrative law and rulemaking have changed. So Treasury is confronting heightened standards of review under Loeb or Bright. The first Trump administration also imposed a higher standard of review on rulemaking. There was further review by the Office of Management and Budget, for example, and rules on pulling old regulations before they could publish new regulations. And so all those sort of policies and procedures have slow down the guidance process or add additional steps and certainly additional pages to the published product. So those are some kind of changes in the Treasury Department. The Treasury Department, when they're working on Treasury regulations, also work closely with the Office of Chief Counsel at the IRS. They've also had some additional people. And so one sort of item we'll be looking at is how personnel change in the Chief Counsel's office and how that might impact the rulemaking process as senior leaders transition out of Office of Chief Counsel. Folks like the associate chief counsels and various subject matters and their immediate deputies, we might see similar periods where the published guidance process needs to pause or take some time to get closer review.
And Dan, in addition to everything you just explained that really speaks to guidance slowdown or stoppage, there's also some new rules around for new regulations that a certain number of old regulations have to go away.
Yes. So in the first Trump administration, there was a rule that for every new rule, you had to find and repeal two old rules. And honestly, in the Treasury space, that wasn't that hard because in the portion of the Code of Federal Regulations implementing the Internal Revenue Code, there have been a lot of old rules that no longer apply because the code has changed. And so it was easy to find that dead wood and repeal it, and that would give capacity to issue new regulations. the current guidance is that you need 10 old regulations for every new one. And there's only so much dead wood hanging around the Code of Federal Regulations. So it might be harder for them to meet that 10 for 1 standard compared to the 2 for 1 standard from the first Trump administration. And depending on how strictly that's enforced, that could be a constraint they face.
Yeah, that's interesting. When I think about, you know, there's a lot of guidance still from TCJA that isn't finalized. And now we're looking at potential new tax legislation that would also need guidance. So it's just an interesting context to think about what's needed for new guidance for taxpayers to really to understand how they should be treating things, and then the need to get rid of so many old regulations.
And we've seen before that political priorities will often trump longstanding but less prominent regulatory projects just in the review process. And so it's definitely possible that some of these older regulation needs that where we've been living with proposed regulations or regulations need to be updated might fall by the wayside if there are new priorities that require immediate regulation. There's another question about whether Treasury will look to change or reverse some of the calls made and regulations from the last administration. It's something that the new administration may be interested in, but they have to choose where to spend their resources. And so while there may be one or two projects where they decide to go in a completely different direction on regs that are now in final form, in general, I find that they end up taking the rules largely where they are as a starting point, just because there's only so much capacity. And especially if new legislation passes, they'll want to focus on implementing that new legislation, which will be Congress and the administration's top priority.
And so in the banking context, I think about the CAMT proposed regulations, where there's still a lot of questions, particularly related to partnerships. I think about the excise tax and the controversy around the funding rule, and just wonder how that plays in if resources are looking ahead instead of back to help taxpayers with some of the current law.
That's an excellent question. And one conversation that taxpayers may need to have with the new Treasury personnel is if we're going to be in a situation where the, say, corporate alternative minimum tax proposed regulations remain in proposed form for an extended period of time, maybe the Treasury Department needs to revisit the effective date rules and rules around the specified regulations or other rules around reliance to make sure that they're appropriate for a situation where those rules remain outstanding for a long time. There are other areas where where Treasury may have realized that guidance is a little bit underspecified, as in some of the partnership questions or where taxpayers have raised additional questions, and perhaps they could issue sub-regulatory guidance to help taxpayers along if those proposed regulations are going to sit out for a long time. So it will be a different context with CAMT if there are other priorities that kind of come over the top. On the other hand, since those regulations are still in proposed form, there's much more flexibility for the new administration to take them in a different direction and finalization if that's what they decide they want to do.
Thanks, Dan. Let's flip back to the IRS for a moment. And Mary, we've talked through leadership changes. We've talked through the workforce changes. Can you help us put this in context to what does this mean for taxpayers? Taxpayers, and right, we think about you could be in the midst of an exam, you could be in appeals, fast track. Like, what should taxpayers expect if we know? And does their approach or strategy change at all as a result of this?
Right. So because, you know, it was probably within 3-4 weeks, we saw the departure of probationary employees. We saw the departure of anyone that took the kind of resign and get paid out through September 30th offer. So we definitely saw in that time period, myself, other colleagues in the tax practitioner community, we saw revenue agents immediately tell us they were leaving. And so that would result in the reassignment of their case. Like, we saw various different tactics of that, like the reassignment of their case to another revenue agent. I know that, like, I've had another revenue agent step in. I've had other colleagues waiting for the new revenue agent to step in. I've had clients saying, we haven't heard from anybody. What do we do? There were other revenue agents that left mid-exam, and, you know, their manager stepped in as kind of a placeholder. So that kind of, like, if you're in that situation, it could be a little, it could vary as to how that particular team and territory was addressing the reassignments. But I can also say that it hasn't happened with me personally, but I do know of other colleagues where the examination was closed. I mean, the one and only revenue agent assigned stepped away and the client got a closing letter. Or there was immediate talk of what can we do to wrap up this examination. So it really depends on the context of the particular examination. Now, with that being said, you know, there are also taxpayers that are very large taxpayers, comprise their exam team comprises of many people. And so the exam team might have lost a team member or two, but the examination keeps moving forward. But like I said, it is on a case by case basis. And there has been some, you know, pause in some of the exams we've seen. And then I think even practically speaking, you know, it kind of does raise the questions of, is this a point in time, if our revenue agent has left or the team has been impacted, the IRS exam team has been impacted, it raises the question of, at this point in time, is there some way to wrap up this examination quickly? Or in other situations, I know the IRS has come and asked for further statute extensions. Is that another point in time to have a discussion with the currently assigned IRS agents as to where is this examination heading? I think the most general statement I can make is what we are seeing in examinations, if an examination has been impacted by an IRS employee leaving, it has quite often created a pause for the taxpayer and even the IRS to reevaluate where the examination is at and where it is going or where it should be going. So that, you know, that I can see most anecdotally.
That seems like a great time for the taxpayer to take the pause, reconsider strategy, and see if there's a different tactic they want to take, like you said, to close it sooner, settle differently, et cetera.
Right, exactly. To try to address the controversy more quickly.
What about appeals, fast-tracked? Were those resources impacted as well?
So it's really interesting you ask that, because, I mean, I think I've said this several times on this podcast. Articles are coming out fast and furious. You know, I hear various things from people closer to the service itself. I have yet to see an immediate impact to appeals or read of particular numbers of staff and employee at appeals that have been impacted. You know, I have yet to hear of an appeals situation being impacted, or an appeals officer stepping away. You know, with respect to fast track, something like fast track, I haven't heard anything about the IRS stepping away from fast track. I mean, again, maybe about a month ago, there was guidance that, like, hey, fast track is here, you know, taxpayers should request it. The IRS should generally honor the request for fast track. So again, maybe is that partly a strategy also clients should take into consideration? Is fast track now even more palatable to exam teams to go to? But, you know, I think this is all a roundabout way Liz is saying, I don't have a ton of insight into how appeals staff has been impacted yet by these workforce cuts.
But I think that's interesting in the larger context it also plays into. It's right. It's going to be very individualized by taxpayer, by exam, but certainly a great time to think very specifically about next steps, yes, wherever you, yes, are in that process.
Yeah, agree. And then I think just one last thing to add, because we had talked about this. It will be interesting to see, I mean, obviously interesting to see over the next 6 to 12 months in general, how things work out. And particularly with respect to the direct taxpayer service employees, because, you know, again, the phone lines, are they losing staffing on the phone lines? Are they losing staffing in the processing centers? We have April 15th coming up. And I mean, I know we, you know, in this podcast is geared towards the banking industry, but April 15th is when millions of individuals and businesses file their tax returns. So that's certainly going to be a data point to us as to how the IRS is moving forward with these workforce reductions.
Yes, excellent point. We are focused on how this impacts the banking industry, but as always, it impacts all of us individually too. So a lot to see. And I think that's a great summary. So Dan and Mary, first of all, I want to thank you for talking us through this topic today. Great insights. I think it was really helpful context for what's happening at IRS and Treasury, what we might expect in coming weeks. I know there's still a lot of unanswered questions, just like in lots of other areas right now. So it'll be interesting to see how things unfold in Washington over the next months. So I would love to have you guys back. I look forward to speaking with you further as we understand more about the specific impacts to controversy and to guidance. And to our audience, thank you for joining us today. This is Liz Lamadou on behalf of KPMG's Banking and Capital Markets Tax Practice. I look forward to talking again soon.
Thanks for listening to In the Vault with KPMG. Be sure to subscribe to this series to be notified of new episodes.